Why do some people prefer jazz while others enjoy pop music? What makes one person spend thousands on minimalist furniture while another fills their home with ornate decorations? These aren't innocent personal preferences, but powerful markers of social position. Pierre Bourdieu's groundbreaking work, Distinction, reveals how our seemingly personal tastes function as a sophisticated system of social classification and power. This revolutionary perspective has transformed our understanding of culture, becoming one of the most influential sociological texts ever published. Beyond academic circles, its insights have reshaped marketing, education, and politics. At its core, Distinction exposes the hidden machinery of social power operating through our everyday choices, from the music we enjoy to the food we eat and the art we appreciate. What we consider good taste isn't natural. It's systematically produced through education and upbringing. The ability to appreciate art for its formal qualities rather than function is a historical invention tied to specific social conditions. Social classes approach art differently. The privileged develop what Bourdieu calls an aesthetic disposition, a detached stance focused on form over content. This stems from economic security, extensive education, and early exposure to legitimate culture. A banker's child who grows up visiting museums develops this disposition effortlessly, while someone from a working-class background might feel uncomfortable in these spaces. Working-class aesthetics prioritize function over form, preferring subjects with practical or emotional significance, like communions or sunsets, rather than abstract compositions. This distinction is hierarchical. The pure aesthetic becomes the legitimate way of consuming culture, while the popular approach is stigmatized. Your preference for Bach over pop music isn't just personal choice, it's a social performance signaling your position in the class hierarchy. Bourdieu rejects simplistic class definitions based solely on income, conceptualizing social space along three dimensions: volume of capital, total resources, composition of capital, types of resources, and trajectory, changes over time. Volume of capital separates the haves from the have-nots, while composition distinguishes those rich in economic capital, business owners, executives, from those rich in cultural capital, professors, artists. A business owner and professor with similar resources illustrate this difference. The businessman's economic capital creates preferences for luxury cars and golf clubs, while the professor's cultural capital drives them toward intellectual pursuits. The trajectory dimension captures movement through social space over time, explaining why a declining aristocrat experiences their position differently from a newly wealthy entrepreneur. This framework explains why similar positions produce different tastes and how families employ reconversion strategies, directing children toward fields where their existing capital yields better rewards, to maintain their position when threatened. Bourdieu reveals how class distinctions become physically embodied, inscribed in our bodies, movements, and basic preferences. Our class conditions literally shape our physical selves. Food preferences illustrate this clearly. Manual workers favor nourishing and economical foods like hearty stews, not just from budget constraints, but because their relationship to the body prioritizes strength. This contrasts with bourgeois preference for the light and refined. Working-class meals emphasize abundance, while bourgeois dining features restraint through small portions, multiple courses, and strict etiquette. These differences reflect distinct relationships to the future: working-class immediacy versus bourgeois deferred gratification. The worker experiences his body as a machine needing fuel, while the executive sees his body as a project requiring discipline. Even body language reflects class position. Working-class vigor contrasts with bourgeois restraint. How people move constitutes a physical demeanor marking social trajectory. Similarly, sports preferences reflect these embodied distinctions, with working-class sports emphasizing strength and sometimes violence, boxing, rugby, while elite sports privilege distance, control, and aesthetic form, golf, tennis. At the heart of Bourdieu's theory lies the habitus, the system of durable, transposable dispositions that generate our practices and perceptions. It's society internalized, operating through us without conscious awareness. The habitus forms through early experiences and social conditions, shaping our actions below explicit awareness. Its power comes from generating seemingly spontaneous preferences that align with our social position. The banker's daughter, who naturally appreciates classical music, and the worker's son, who just doesn't get abstract art, express dispositions corresponding to their class conditions. Their tastes feel personal because the social has been so thoroughly internalized, it's experienced as natural. This explains why social mobility is difficult. Even with new economic resources, individuals often retain dispositions from their original class position. The nouveau riche businessman may buy expensive art, but lacks the ease of those born into cultural privilege. That discomfort in unfamiliar social situations? That's your habitus encountering an unfamiliar field, what Bourdieu calls hysteresis, a mismatch between your internalized dispositions and the environment's implicit rules. The habitus functions as both a structured structure, shaped by social divisions, and a structuring structure, generating practices, allowing social structures to reproduce themselves through the seemingly free choices of individuals who have internalized their position's limits. Taste functions as a battlefield where groups compete for social recognition and legitimacy. In what Bourdieu calls the classification struggle, groups fight to establish categories favoring their own characteristics. The space of lifestyles represents these ongoing battles over class emblems. Distinction exists only through struggles for exclusive appropriation of distinctive signs. When styles become too widespread, dominant groups abandon them for new markers, perpetuating fashion cycles. When luxury becomes too accessible through mass production, elites pivot to subtler signifiers, demonstrating distinction through inconspicuous consumption recognizable only to insiders. Culture functions as a stake in a game requiring collective belief in its value. The opposition between authentic and imitation culture masks how high and middlebrow cultures define themselves against each other, with dominated classes serving merely as reference points for the vulgar. What's ultimately at stake is the power to define reality itself, to determine which principles organize social perception. Those controlling legitimate classification principles possess the power to make people see and believe in a particular version of the social world. Bourdieu's analysis isn't completely deterministic. Liberation begins with recognizing our dispositions as reflections of social position rather than personal choice. Developing reflexivity toward our preferences allows us to appreciate diverse cultural forms as expressions of humanity instead of status markers. Education could break these cycles, but traditional schooling often reinforces class distinctions by mistaking inherited cultural capital for natural talent. Truly emancipatory education would explicitly teach dominant cultural codes while validating working-class cultural forms, enabling genuine cultural mobility. Bourdieu challenges us to imagine a world where aesthetic appreciation isn't weaponized for social distinction, where different ways of relating to culture are recognized as equally valid. This means developing a more inclusive understanding of legitimate culture, not abandoning standards. In our divided society, preferences constitute the battleground where social hierarchies are maintained or challenged. Understanding how taste functions as power creates the possibility for more equitable cultural spaces where distinction doesn't require domination.